So welcome to BD and Me's Midweekend. Thank you very much for coming and joining us.
Thank you very much indeed. Lovely.
How was your Christmas and New Year, just to kick us off?
Well, that's my first ever Christmas in about 10 years at home on my own. And so I had five of my friends come over and I cooked. And I made a big mistake because I left it very late and I went shopping on Christmas Eve to be met with nothing on the shop shelves. So I had to go into a market to buy a massive turkey that cost me £30.
Oh, well, at least
and
it worked
still
out in the end.
Eating leftovers.
Oh, perfect. That's the best way to be doing it.
Absolutely.
So, your tour, The Laughter Master, comes to the Arts Centre on the 12th of February. Have you been to the Arts Centre before? What do you think of performing here?
That's a very good question. I have been there before, and we had a good time there last time. We just love travelling around up and down the country. It's really good to, a good way to see the country that you live in by touring and going to these little theatres, and hopefully people come out and enjoy themselves also.
Well, certainly. So let's sort of trace back a little bit towards the beginning of your career. As far as I've been reading all over the place, that you started out more as a compere than necessarily just a stand-up. Do you still enjoy doing that, or what's the difference between the compere and the stand-up?
Well, to be honest, I don't really get much chance to do that anymore. But yes, when you have a really well-run comedy show, it's generally the compere that bolts everything together and makes the show run smoothly. And the compere, you know, if it's a decent, good compere, he knows how to bring an audience up, bring them down, time keep. And generally speaking, a lot of people kind of go, oh, look, he was really funny, he used to be a comedian. But the point is, a lot of compares are also great comedians.
Perfect. So you mentioned the sort of little clubs that you keep control of. Do you prefer the big venues to the smaller comedy clubs, or have you got a love for both still?
Definitely got a love for both. When you do a small, intimate room, you can sort of play with the audience a bit more. And obviously with a really big room, you know, or a stadium, you have lots more money in your pocket. So swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, certainly. The Fringe Festival, obviously a big part of many comics' lives and seemingly a very large part of yours. Is Edinburgh one of your favourite places to perform?
Edinburgh is the hotbed of comedy at the moment because it's the one time of the year when a lot of comics who do the club circuit do like 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes, and or maybe an extended set for half an hour. But Edinburgh, you get a chance to do a four-hour show where you can do some different ideas and basically come out of your comfort zone and have the discipline of doing a show every night for a month. So yeah, and it's the biggest art festival in the world, so I would suggest that any budding comic get up to Edinburgh.
Oh, it's fantastic. I've enjoyed it the few times that I've managed to make it. Do your shows normally sort of birth themselves from your time, your month at the Fringe, or is there a different process for doing one of your touring shows?
A bit of both. I'm doing some stuff, a couple of radio shows a week, so I'm doing writing for that, and I'll be testing out that material. And of course, Edinburgh, you know, I get up there with some notes, and then from those notes, hopefully will lovely routines be born, and then I'll take that on the road.
Perfect. What was doing the Royal Variety Performance like for you?
The Royal Variety Performance, that was very nerve-wracking because, again, it was like doing a big room and you're on a mixed, proper variety bill. And when I did it, I'm pretty certain that nobody knew who I was. And you're given 7 minutes with which to get the audience. And because they pay a lot of money, because it's all for charity, people are sitting there with their black tie and their lovely ball gowns, etc. And they literally look up to the royal box for permission to laugh. So you don't really get a chance to redo it if you mess it up. So very daunting. But yeah. Thankfully, it went well.
Perfect. Did you manage to get yourself introduced after the show as well, or?
Oh my goodness! Of course, yes. Yeah.
Wonderful.
That is the one of the perks of doing that gig. You stand up in a line, and if you're a featured performer, you're in the front row, and you do meet royalty. And I have a picture from that was taken by somebody that takes now pride of place on my mum's mantelpiece.
Oh, that's fantastic. Your comedy is often one that interacts quite frequently with the audience. We've spoken to a few comedians in the past and been so lucky to do so, who don't have the best view of hecklers, don't enjoy them so much. Are you more of that opinion, or because you're so audience-based at times, is the heckler a useful thing to you?
Well, not necessarily. It depends. It depends on the room. If it's a massive audience, you don't really have the luxury to play with them and do lots of interaction. It's a bit of a miss, I think. But I do like to be in the moment, and so if something occurs to me or if something happens in the room, then I'll run with it. In terms of a heckler, I guarantee that every comic has their set, has their show, and if the heckler was not there, the show would still be out there. Heckles can be very disruptive. Sometimes it can be funny, but if they weren't there, as I say, you know, it makes no difference.
Yeah, it seems about right, to be honest there. You come from quite a large family. Do they often come and support you at the gigs or any of the recordings that you do for TV and radio, or do they just sort of mill about and sometimes they'll drop in and hear you?
It's not by force. They come sometimes, although I've got to say my parents have only ever seen me twice in all these years, which is fine. But if I'm doing a big TV project, maybe one of my siblings would come along. But you know what? You know, they've all got lives to lead. My ego isn't that big at massaging by family turning up. In fact, my best friend in the world has only ever seen me do stand-up once. And he's one of the funniest people I know. And he says to me, I just don't like comedy. And I said, well, you don't like comedy. I'm like laughing. Everyone likes laughing. But we just chat and go on a very different level.
No, certainly. You have done, obviously, as well, many people know you as a stand-up. You've been on both television and radio in various forms. Do you find that, say, doing a show on Radio 4 is incredibly different to one for BBC One, or is there some crossover there?
For me, there's a lot of crossover because with the radio shows that we do, we have a live audience. And the stuff that doesn't make it onto the airwaves, I know what that stuff is going to be, so I can be a bit cheeky with them in the live room. Oh yeah, a bit cheeky, but with television as well, there's a lot of constraints. There's lots of compliance and regulations, and there's quite a few hoops you have to go through. That's why nothing ever beats doing a live stand-up show where the audience have come to see you, you're your own self-censor, I'm my own editor, you know, unless I'm in an editing suite with a TV show, you're at the mercy of the producers.
Yeah, certainly. So going again, branching back towards television, you were sort of fronting, I suppose, the BAFTA-nominated documentary Batty Man about homophobia in the black communities of Britain and Jamaica. How was that for you? It's such a different thing from comedy.
It's a very much different thing. And basically I was approached by Channel 4 to do something. And I thought, you know what, my comedic mind might be able to look at this in a light-hearted way. But on the journey to making that programme, it was kind of a bit of an eye-opener. So it got more deep than I expected it to be. But I think it's a subject that needs to be spoken about. So, very, very proud of it. And it's apparently been used as an educational tool in schools and prisons, I believe.
Huh. Well, that's also just fantastic there. Your talents have, as I've been looking through them, it's more than just comedy or documentary. You seem to be able to turn your hand to pretty much anything you want. You were in both the Edinburgh and the West End run of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. How was that for you to act?
Well, when they had a genius mind of casting comics in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, originally I said no, because I thought I don't want to do a play in somebody else's words. And I was kind of talked into it, and it was just the most incredible experience, with a cast led by Christian Slater, Frankie Barber, and my mate as the comics, playing all these very, very straight roles, and not playing it for laughs, and then going to the West End of London, I was in my element. Opening night, I got more flowers than anybody. That's how feverish I became, and it hasn't left me.
Definitely. I also saw that you were in School for Scandal. How's the modern play versus the restoration? Was there one you particularly enjoyed more?
Well, I like the modern play because that play in particular anyway, you know, Oscar-nominated play, it's a very, very well-known piece and it resonates till today. The difference with the restoration piece that I did is the language trying to get your head around the real meaning of the text. And we played it for laughs as well. And again, that was a very, very strong ensemble cast with the magnificent Lionel Blair, who is now a dear, dear showbiz friend of mine. So yeah, no, if anything happens, whatever happens, I'll put my hand to it.
No, certainly. Another one that you did, of course, was writing. How did you find turning your hand to not only something less perhaps creative, as it comes, well, I suppose most of your comedy comes from a factual sense as well, but writing an autobiography must have been quite an odd experience, but was it a good one for you?
It was a good experience, but I think what happened was I was able to remember lots of things, because every single one of us has got a story to tell, which is the main thing. We've all got some sort of story and how you deal with things, and because I've got a kind of a positive disposition anyway, and a humorous mind, I kind of picked the sort of stuff I was going to talk about. So for me, the book isn't really an autobiography, it's more of a memoir of certain points in my life that I saw the funny side through, maybe not at the time, but now I do. And if anything, it was quite cathartic looking back and going, oh my God, yeah, that did happen. And then kind of put a funny spin on it.
Did your family get heavily involved with you whilst you were writing it, or was it more you
absolutely
did it?
Absolutely not. No, in fact, they were very scared that I would tell the family secrets. In fact, there's a couple of stories I tell in the book that I've slightly embellished, and my sister phoned me up and she went, that didn't happen like that. So it's very much, from my point of view, my perspective, and they were not involved at all.
Yeah. Are you still hugely close with your family then? Because you still live in South London. Do you see them quite often, or is it...
Absolutely. In fact, I was there this afternoon. Yes. When you come from a big family like mine, then you do have to... obviously, there are people I don't get on with. but in the main, yeah, we're all very close. I've got an army of nephews and nieces, and I'm pleased to say that I'm their favourite uncle.
Perfect.
I'm the funny one.
That's what you need. In terms of things that you do when you get your occasional day off, is there anything particularly odd you enjoy doing as part of your downtime, or what do you normally get up to with your day off?
Well, normally I would go and see friends of mine that I very rarely get to see. And as a touring comic, you rarely get to see other comics anymore, because the circuit in this country is still thriving, and I kind of miss my friends. So if I get some downtime, I cook up with some friends, or my tour manager at the moment and support act. We're all very good friends, and my tour manager's got so many interesting stories to tell that, you know, he sends us to sleep now and again.
Lovely. You're a man who goes all over the world, really. Do you find somewhere like Australia is easier to perform than the UK, or are they just two very different places?
Oh, that's tempting fate. I wouldn't say anywhere is easy to perform, because you've always got to work hard. But thankfully, when I first went to Australia, probably 9 years ago now, they just took to me. So, and also there's that thing about, because Australia and New Zealand are quite far away, the audiences do show an appreciation for people making that trip. And if they like you, they do support you. And thankfully, touch wood, I'm going to rest on my laurels, but I'm so grateful. And like what I do.
Perfect. Do you normally try and tack on an extra couple of days when you go and do a tour out there, just so you can actually enjoy being there, or does your schedule not really allow that for you?
In an ideal world, that is exactly what one would do, but I think if you ask anybody that is self-employed, you know, you really can't afford the luxury of taking days off here and there and everywhere, because if you don't work, then you don't eat. But thankfully, when I do tours in Australia and New Zealand, I get to stay in one place for like a month in Melbourne, a week in Sydney, a month in Adelaide, a week in Brisbane. So I kind of get time in the day to kind of have a nose around, but not really a holiday.
What was it like to perform in the Sydney Opera House? What was that for you?
Oh, the Sydney Opera House. Well, I mean, what a dream. You know, one of the most iconic buildings in the world.
Certainly.
It's my second time playing there, and it was just so good, such good fun. And I did that really touristy thing by walking around the building and taking a picture of my poster outside the venue.
It just sounds like an incredible thing to have done.
Oh dear, I told you, I'm on the, what bridge is this?
You did. You did. We're back though. We're back. Could we try that one again quickly for you?
Yes.
So, in regards to a lot of work on Radio 4 at the moment, have you plans to return to television anytime soon?
I do have plans to hit the big screen and the little screen. Yes, we've got two projects in the pipeline at the moment. One we've already piloted, and the other one is coming from an idea that we've already done on Radio 4. So, yeah, lots of things happening, and when I'm allowed to, I will announce them.
Perfect, we look forward to that.
Thank you very much.
Have you any plans to head back towards acting? Is it more on a
Oh,
straight level?
do you know what? I would love the opportunity to do a straight acting job. Maybe playing a baddie. I'd quite like the idea of that. And if anyone is listening, you know, I see myself as the next James Bond. You know, I picture myself in a period piece. You know, lots of things. I'm available.
Certainly, well, hopefully we'll get something
Or
from that, and
perhaps
if
if we're
not.
going to do a comedy, I'll do the remake of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Perfect. We'll see if we can get that organised here for you. It's quite a big
Please,
theatre
yes.
place here. We'll try and get something on top there for you.
Oh, I'd love to do it.
It'd be fantastic to have you down more than once. Are you looking forward to coming to Coventry? Do you reckon you'll be staying here, or are you just going to head back after the show?
Sadly, I will not be able to stay overnight because that run of gigs we have, we've got, like, I think, 12 days on the trot on the road. So it's
Oof.
very much in and out. And then 2 days later, I head off back to Australia. So it's very, very tight schedule.
Yeah, no, certainly. Do you enjoy going to America as much as you do perhaps Australia?
I love going to America and performing in America. Again, they've got a comedy circuit that is kind of, it was booming quite a few years ago, but there are so many clubs there now, and the Brits are making waves. They've got a nice international scene, and if you've got a very different voice, a very different take on things, they're very receptive.
Perfect. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for talking to us.
You're more than welcome.
Could I ask quickly for you a song request? We'd like to sort of get that from everybody if we can.
Oh, a song request for me. Oh, my goodness. How about, what, you've completely thrown me there. No, what's that? Like a soul without a mind and a body without a heart. I'm missing every part. Remember that song?
I can't think of the name of that. Oh, maybe we just get
Unfinished
you to sing the whole
Symphony.
thing.
Unfinished Symphony. Love that song. By
Perfect.
Massive Attack, I think.
We will get that for you then. Perfect.
Boom.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for talking to me and coming on the show. It's been wonderful to have you and a real privilege.
Well, make sure that all your listeners come to the show, one night only, and you've got to come as well.
I'll be there. I will
Will you
be
be
there.
there?
I will, certainly.
All right, then, well, I'll take a pint off you then.
100%. I'll see you on Friday the 12th of February and for a pint afterwards.
Brilliant. That's a date.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
See you then.
Bye.